Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser, and it's good to be with you. Up ahead this hour, ASU back to campus, state legislature funding for the new economy initiative and public state universities, and the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. I'll discuss it all with ASU President Dr. Michael Crow here at the bottom of the hour before all is said and done. But first, a conversation long overdue. I'm very much looking forward to it with the mayor of the town of Marana, Ed Honey. We'll cover a wide variety of topics, and that's our show today. 520-790-2040 is our live line opportunity to join the conversation, and that's the number that our guest now, Mayor Ed Honey, used to call in. Mayor, thanks for being with us this morning. It's good to be with you.
Thank you, Zach. It's always an opportunity to speak to you. So.
Absolutely. Well, I know there are many listeners from Marana who both listen live and on the podcast, KBY.com, iTunes, and Spotify, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, who are looking forward to this conversation. I wanted to kick it off this way, Mayor, and I would never ask you to give away the entire thing, but the state of the town is later this month in Marana, July 29th. Any highlights, sneak peeks, any big topics that you're excited to cover? What is the state of the town of Marana here in 2021?
Well, the state of the town of Marana is excellent. We're doing quite well. Fortunately for a lot of the cities and towns, the federal government's been sending us bags of money to do things within our community. But Marana has done quite well. Actually, even during COVID, our sales tax actually went up and not down. I think people were going to Costco's and Walmart's and buying everything on the shelf, and actually sales tax revenue increased. Our hotel motels are doing really well. We have 1,270 rooms in Marana, and in April we were at 68%, which is actually quite good. So we're doing pretty well.
And I know there's, for example, with the Outlook Mall, Mayor Ed Honey, we're not seeing that 68% capacity per se from that cross-border tourism and shopping, right? We're still seeing things kind of plugged at the border, or are we seeing some of that traffic coming back from our neighbors to the south?
Well, we really appreciate our neighbors from Sonora or Sinaloa. And if you go to the Simon Mall there on Twin Peaks or even Costco, you're starting to see a lot more Sonoran cars. So I think it is loosening up a little bit. And we retail really depends a lot on our Sonoran neighbors. And we're hoping that the feds will loosen it up a little bit at the border for people to come over and shop and see their relatives.
We're with Mayor Ed Honey of the town of Marana here, just north of where we're airing this live show. I want to talk with you, Mayor, about residential development. But any last remarks on anything that that you'll be talking about at State of the Town, or otherwise we'll move on?
Well, I'm going to be speaking, but we are having three guest speakers as well. Amy McReynolds, president of KB Homes Southern Arizona. Brad Bradley, the chief of Northwest Fire, and Clint Kuntz. Dr. Kuntz will be speaking on behalf of Marana Healthcare, MHC Healthcare. So there's going to be four of us speaking, and everything I think is going to be pretty positive about our community.
Mayor Ed Honey, that's a great segue to the conversation, part of the conversation I wanted to have here before our first break, and that is residential development to the north of you. And I wanted to combine that as well. I think you have some updates on this count too. But the conversation in all of Arizona certainly is, can we keep up with the in-migration from the rest of the country? Can we keep up with building new homes? In terms of the drought that we're seeing, some concerns around water, Ken Marana, with really a history of housing development, and I think Marana will be the place where a lot of the new housing stock in Pima County happens and will likely continue. Can Marana continue residential development, and how are you guys handling the water shortage and water treatment?
Well, first, let me talk a little bit about development. Over the last fiscal year, we had 1,067 new SFR, single-family residences, which averages out to 89 a month. I think we're the fastest-growing community in southern Arizona as far as new housing. We had 143 permits for single-family housing in June. That's been our biggest month for the last couple of years. They're coming. Interest rates are pretty low, even though the cost of housing is going up. In regard to water, Marana's in pretty good shape. Our water table is actually going up. We get a lot of recharge from the Santa Cruz River and different places. And wet water has not been an issue for us. Paper water ends up being the problem because Arizona has very strong regulations relating to water.
And certainly north to you, Mayor, in Pinal County, those restrictions are and those regulations are becoming a bit stronger. I know I'm airing from within the city of Tucson limits, Mayor, and I know that that Tucson Water, as kind of a separate enterprise fund of the city, has and is required by the state to have 100 years of water supply. And Tucson Water is saying, hey, even if our CAP allotment is cut by 50%, we're still in really good shape. Is the town of Marana in similar shape? Let's say our region CAP allotment gets cut considerably. Is Marana sustainable for the future?
Absolutely, we are. There are other different places to go. CAGRD, the Central Arizona Water Replenishment District, credits. Like I said, Marana has a lot of wet water. Our water table in far north Marana, where the town hall is and where I live, has actually been going up six inches to a foot a year. So we have the wet water. I don't think that's going to be an issue. We also have the 100-year guaranteed water supply regulation just like the city.
We're with Mayor Ed Honey this morning, mayor of the town of Marana. That's as good a place as I need to take our first break of this conversation, our first break of the hour. When we come back, I want to ask one more water-related question. It's a regional question. And then sticking with that theme, I want to also talk about the Regional Transportation Authority, something that Mayor Ed Honey has been a part of for a while. The conversation continues on regional transportation and what the next phase is. We'll get the mayor's thoughts when we come back here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We'll be right back. 10:30 The Voice. Don't go anywhere.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 10:30 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk, or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And welcome back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, here in the Common Workspace Studios for this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. ASU back to campus, state legislature funding for public universities, and the New Economy Initiative, and the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. I'll discuss it all with ASU President Dr. Michael Crow at 9:30 here during this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point. Here with us again for part two of our conversation this morning is Mayor Ed Honey, Mayor of the Town of Marana. Mayor, I want to talk about regional transportation, a topic that we've discussed on this show before. But first, I wanted to wrap up a water-related question. The city of Tucson voted to raise water rates on unincorporated Pima County residents. A lot of people thought that that might be a stick or a carrot to annexation into the city of Tucson. I'm not convinced, but what I do think it might do is encourage some to incorporate annex into existing municipalities in Pima County. Do you expect to see any annexation into Marana come from currently unincorporated Pima County residents who are seeing a water rate hike and may come to you guys?
I have had several calls from residents and business owners interested in looking at Marana for annexed into our community. I don't know if a whole lot of action is going to take place. I can tell you Marana serves county neighborhoods as well with our municipal water supply, and we have no intention of charging them any higher rate than our own citizens.
Gotcha. And is that including a cost of service analysis that shows a similar cost, or is that despite cost? What is your philosophical reason for keeping those rates the same, whether or not they are in Marana?
Well, it's hard to differentiate. You know, even within the town of Marana, there are places we have to pump water uphill. Water's pretty heavy. It can be a little more costly with pumping water uphill. But we charge all of our citizens the same rate. You know, we just don't want to start differentiating those rates. I have talked to Sharon Bronson and different members of the county board, they're not very happy. And the county controls wastewater for the city of Tucson. Do they get a reciprocation here?
Right.
You know, Tucson has water, but Pima County has wastewater. I certainly hope that doesn't happen, because the loser in the long run is the homeowner.
Mayor Ed Honey, Town of Marana. I want to transition over to transportation. Every time I have you on, I like to get your thoughts. You're part of these regional conversations as we head towards a potential renewal of the Regional Transportation Authority. That 20-year term is up here in the middle of the decade, and it could go before voters. We have seen a lot of interesting conversation lately between the county, between municipalities such as yours and Oro Valley and Sahuarita, and then the city of Tucson. You're in those rooms, Mayor. What do you make of where the conversation is going? And let's say the city of Tucson decides not to be a part of that renewal. Can the rest of the municipalities in Pima County still run an RTA next?
The answer is yes. What that looks like may vary quite a bit. Actually, right now, 8 of the 9 entities at the RTA are all in agreement to move on to RTA next, which would start in 2026 with the vote probably in 2024, exactly like we are now. I can tell you the city of Tucson has received about 62% of all the money from the RTA, even though they're about 50% of the total county population. And in this last quarter, they're going to get about 90%. So they're not losing out, but they have been dragging their feet. All of the entities have submitted programs to the CAC, Citizen Advisory Committee, as to what we want in the new RTA next, with the exception of the city. So we could split the city off and do an RTA with everybody in the county but the city, which would be about 500,000 people. We could include the city whether they submit programs or not. There's a lot of different things we could do. I personally think the RTA has been the best transportation program in Pima County and the surrounding area for the last 20 or 30 years.
Mayor Ed Honey, Mayor of the Town of Marana. A quick follow-up to that, and then we can move on to another, to our last item, I think, if we can get to it. My understanding from what I'm kind of hearing out there, Mayor, is that the city of Tucson, when they submit their projects, are going to have an emphasis on a couple of things. One is maintenance, a sense that the RTA currently doesn't prioritize maintenance. It prioritizes creating new infrastructure but not maintaining it. And then a greater emphasis on more multimodal transportation options. And Mayor, what I hear out there is that the CAC is actually very open to both of those. We haven't seen that list of projects yet, but there is openness to considering a maintenance function and a greater emphasis on multimodal. Do you share the PAGs and the CACs? Do you share that sentiment of openness to those things, or are you pretty consistent that you want to see what we've had just renewed?
I pretty much stick with the existing program. We do a certain amount of O&M in the current RTA project, but it's very limited. It's not a program to patch potholes. The program is to build new interchanges or widen roads or build sidewalks to get people safely off the roads or hawk signals to protect our children at schools and wildlife crossings. And under the regulations by the state, most of the projects have to be capital, either widening or new projects.
Mayor Ed Honey, Mayor of the Town of Marana, Last question here. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes, and I guess it does circle back in a way to my first question about the state of the town, but a little bit different. I was looking back. I think I last had you on the program back in March, and about that time, I know you and council and staff got together and kind of mapped out some priorities for Marana into the future. As you look ahead, Mayor, and you've been on the scene for quite a while, what are the top one or two things that excite you about Marana that you really want to focus on as long as you're in leadership?
Well, we are growing quite rapidly, and Marana is not just a bedroom community anymore. I can tell you F.L. Smith Krebs and Sergeant Controls both have over 500 employees at Cordell and the Freeway. PBV Manufacturing is now building a major new center at Tangerine and I-10 that will employ 100 people. Amazon Distribution is coming in at Ina and Silverbell. They're going to employ about 300 people, and it's my understanding they're going to use all electric vehicles for the disbursement there. So we have jobs coming into the community. We're doing expansion to our airport. We hope to get a tower within the next couple of years, working with the feds and the state. And we're doing quite well, actually.
Mayor Ed Honey, Mayor, I will do my best to make sure that it is not, what was it, 3-4 months since you were last on the air. Always enjoy these consistent conversations, and we have listeners all over Pima County, all over Southern Arizona, many listening right now from Marana. So thank you for carving out a few moments for us today, and we'll do this again soon, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Zach. It's always a pleasure.
Mayor Ed Honey, the town of Marana is having their State of the Town next week, end of next week, July 29th. We'll stay connected as we try to do with all of the local municipalities. Tucson and Southern Arizona, that wraps up our first guest conversation of this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. When we return, ASU back to campus, state legislature funding for the new economy initiative and for public universities in Arizona, and the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. We'll discuss it all with ASU President Dr. Michael Crow here at the bottom of the hour. Really interesting. I think our conversation is going to loop into, especially in the last segment, some of the big national and statewide economic initiatives that are happening on microchips, around semiconductors, around some of the big clusters that are starting to happen in Arizona. And how does ASU see the role of the public university, not just its own, but also ours here in Tucson, NAU up in Flagstaff? What is the role of the public university in driving that next for Arizona? And I've said this many times on the program, and it's not original to me, but I think it's important, so I bring it up. The Sun Belt states, the Sun Belt region, has grown and had some level of success in being low cost, low wage, low service, low tax. And the future of Arizona doesn't look like those things. And what does it look like? And how do we change our model so that we can grow and attract a workforce and a full family economy in Arizona? Dr. Michael Crow is at the cutting edge of that conversation. We'll talk campus, COVID, the governor's executive orders, of course, but we'll also talk about what is the future and how does ASU and our public universities in this state fit into it. That and much more up next here on Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. We'll return here in the Common Workspace Studios on 1030 The Voice in just a minute.
Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Good morning again to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We just wrapped up with the mayor of the town of Marana, Ed Honey, one of the fastest-growing communities in Southern Arizona. You can catch that interview and more on our podcast, KVY.com, Spotify, iTunes, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. You can find us there. ASU back to campus, state legislature funding for the new economy initiative and public universities, and the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. The rest of the way this hour, I will be discussing this and more with ASU President Dr. Michael Crow. President Crow, thanks as always for your time here and sharing with us in Southern Arizona. How are you?
Very good, Zach. How are you doing?
Good, good. So I kind of prepped our audience. I think the first half is going to be our kind of standard news update, what's going on in the world of public education and COVID here in the state of Arizona. And then I'm looking forward to looking to the future and what is happening in the state of Arizona and how your university and all of our public universities in Arizona can be a part of it. But let's start with the nuts and bolts. ASU is heading back to campus. School reconvenes on August 19th. It's just around the corner. Tell us about your back to campus plans. You were in the news a month and change ago as Governor Ducey's executive order responded to what he saw as ASU mandates for unvaccinated students, now for K-12 as well. Give us a glimpse of the dynamics you're dealing with as you prepare to get your students back to campus.
Well, we're operating under the assumption, Zach, that the pandemic in one form or another is here to stay. It's a permanent introduction, not as a pandemic, but as a virus to the human ecosystem, and so we're moving forward using every tool that we've got, vaccinations, masking, distancing, every tool that's needed to help make us be able to move forward. So we're going to be fully on campus, fully occupying the residence halls, moving forward with everything as new normal as possible. So for us, new normal means people taking care of each other by choosing to get vaccinated, choosing to mask in certain situations, and making the right choices for their fellow ASU community.
Dr. Crow, I don't want to rehash the past too much, but I was a little confused personally, and I talked about it on the air. I did not read your guidelines on vaccination at ASU as a mandate. I read it as an opening up for those who were either vaccinated or were okay sharing that they were vaccinated. I didn't see it as a mandate. I didn't see that anyone was going to check any information. I didn't see it that it was a per se requirement. It was certainly an encouragement. Was there some confusion around what your policy was before Governor Ducey stepped in? And where does the politics meet the science of this, Dr. Crow?
Well, so we're a science-driven institution, so much so that, we have a daily epidemiological report on the state, on the county, on our student body, on our faculty and staff, on the zip codes in which we're operating. So we understand, even down to the level of what variant is where and how is it moving around. So we make all of our decisions based on that. And our decision was to urge everyone to get vaccinated. And if you were vaccinated, you'd be able to interact on campus in one way. And if you weren't vaccinated, we said that you then would have to keep operating the way that we're operating now. And I think that was perhaps confusing to people. we think that at the end of the day that this virus will be defeated by basically people thinking about someone other than themselves and getting vaccinated to lower the spread, masking to lower the spread, and so forth. But all of that's now obviously up to each and every individual choice or decision-making of each person. And so that's what we're urging. We've launched a major education campaign. I think we have more than 80% of our staff is vaccinated. Students are reporting 70 to 80% vaccination rates. We're trying to drive those up even higher. And so we're now just in a massive education program to keep people on their toes relative to how we manage our way through the latest variations, what they call the variants of this virus. And that's what we're hoping to do.
Dr. Crow, I've been asking individuals who are, you know, in seats of leadership of large organizations, whether it's public or private, the math sort of seems to me a combination of those who are fully vaccinated plus those who are partially vaccinated plus those who got COVID. The thankful part is survived COVID and now have that immunity and may or may not be vaccinated, but that's a component. To me, those three pieces kind of create, in my mind, a data point with which to make a decision of what level of herd immunity are we. Is that sort of the math that you're working off of at ASU? You mentioned vaccination rates, but if you combine all three of those things, are we getting pretty close to that herd immunity everyone's talking about?
Well, there's two factors that are going on. We think we are approaching some level of herd immunity that will at least lower the spread. In fact, right now the spread is largely being concentrated in those that are unvaccinated. So we have even a more concentrated manifestation of the virus in those folks. And then beyond that, I think what we're also looking at is, lower level impacts of the disease itself, so lower hospitalization rates and lower death rates. And so things are moving in the right direction. They're just complicated because there's so many messages out there and so many people don't understand that, you know, this is a simple thing to manage. You know, get a vaccine and be careful when you're around others and we'll be able to move forward. There's ways that we can move this into complete management or, you know, very high levels of management. And we're inching our way up there. We're not quite there yet, but we are making progress.
We're with Dr. Michael Crow, president of Arizona State University. We're discussing this first segment, ASU's back to campus plans. Talk to me about the Delta variant, Dr. Crow, one of the largest student populations of any university in America, right here in Arizona. If you're expressing optimism about the vaccination rates and what you're doing within your own campus body to increase those, any widespread concern on campus about the Delta variant? Or are you confident that if you keep pace the way you are, then it should be no problem?
No, I'm not confident about anything being no problem. I mean, this is a mindless virus that has one desire, which is to mutate and procreate at massive scales. And so math is working against us so long as people allow it to still spread from person to person, because in each spread you get new variants. I mean, Delta is just the latest dominant variant of hundreds of variants and mutations of this virus that are occurring. What we have to do is lower the amount of time that it's allowed to incubate inside humans, varying yet again through that incubation. And so what I'm confident of is that we've got good management tools. What I'm confident of is that we have an educable community and that people will make the right decisions. What I'm not confident of yet is that we're moving quickly enough ahead of it that we can get completely ahead of the wave, because right now we're still trailing a little bit. And we need to get ahead of the wave completely, and we haven't done that yet.
Dr. Michael Crow, president of ASU, this, not my feature question, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask it. Of course, on a lot of people's minds are college sports. What is your athletic policy in terms of filling stadiums and, you know, football, basketball here coming up in the fall and spring semesters? Any changes, any shifts since the last time we spoke?
Well, we're going to be following Pac-12 guidance for our athletes. We're going to be following Pac-12 guidance for our stadiums and CDC guidance and so forth and so on. So whatever the medical experts are telling us in both of those arenas, that's what we're going to be focused on. And so right now our plan is to move forward with our events and to make adjustments as necessary based on medical guidance that's as close to the moment as possible. But in terms of our athletes, you know, we're looking at following the Pac-12 guidance, which is to get as many people vaccinated as possible, to have a regimen of testing and so forth and so on. So we've got all of that in place according to Pac-12 medical rules right now.
My last question on the academic side, and then we'll talk about the budget that the state legislature just recently passed. It includes major funding for the new economy initiative statewide. I want to talk about ASU's piece in that. And then the U.S. Senate passed a $250 billion microchip legislation, the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. I want to speak to that as well. But last academic question here. You know, I've often said that ASU was really built for the COVID reality in terms of technology. And the value of remote learning. Anything that was added in to that suite of offerings that will be continued at ASU even when students are welcomed back to campus and we continue to emerge from COVID-19?
Well, several things here, Zach. So one is we're able to make adjustments to individual student or faculty circumstances as needed using Zoom technology across all of our classrooms. Second, we're launching more than 10 ASU sync degrees where the students don't have to be physically present, but they're here with us in synchronous interaction. That's what ASU sync means, and so we're launching those new degrees this semester. We've accelerated the development of more online degrees, more advanced online degrees, more advanced online learning, more personalized learning, more adaptive learning. Those are ways in which each person finds their own pathway to master certain subjects, so all of that's moving forward. And then during COVID, we've greatly accelerated our virtual reality-based learning platforms, and we'll be launching in January whole new ways to learn science through avatar-driven, full virtual reality immersive learning down at the level of emotional engagement in learning, where you become an object in the class itself. That is, you're a part of an actual experience, an exploration experience. And so we've built all of that during COVID, and all of that's going to be moving forward.
We're grateful this morning to have ASU President Dr. Michael Crow with us here on Tipping Point for not one but two segments here. We're going to turn the page when we come back. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the state legislature's budget, what it means for public universities, and the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act, as well as the $250 billion microchip investment. What does that mean for our state? What does that mean for Arizona State University? We will discuss that on our way back in here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. You're on 1030 The Voice. We'll be right back.
Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Thank you. And welcome back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, here into the Common Workspace Studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on 1030 The Voice, part two of our conversation ahead with Dr. Michael Crow, president of Arizona State University. Dr. Crow, the state legislature finally passed the budget, what I think was the third largest legislative session in Arizona history. Many tried to break the record, but we managed to only be the third largest. The budget, though, thanks to a lot of advocacy, included major funding for ASU's new economy initiative, and really the new economy initiative the Board of Regents is pushing for the three state universities around the state. What does that mean for the public university system at large in Arizona, but obviously specifically for ASU? Give us a sense of the dollars and purposes of this major funding element for the new economy initiative.
Well, thanks, Zach. Let me put that into perspective. So we said some time ago that we would figure out how to fund the university itself, that is, through our own entrepreneurial activities. And so we generate about $4 billion a year of revenue to drive our institution forward. And then the state invests a little bit less than 10% of that into the institution. And what we said to them was, going forward, let us fund the university, and then you fund us for two things. One, to help Arizona students to attend the university, and that's a longer-term challenge that we're working on to lower their costs. And then second, initiatives that help advance the state to solve problems or to advance the state. And so in this case, the legislature has agreed with the governor's budget request to fund the three universities to advance a new economy initiative, which is designed to help us lay down the foundation for producing the new workforce for the most advanced industries and the most advanced technologically driven, knowledge driven economy possible, as well as then laying down the foundation, in addition to workforce development, to actually lay down the foundation so that we in Arizona can be a part of this new economy. So think of advanced microchips, but think beyond microchips into quantum computing or into advanced space technologies or advanced systems or advanced medical systems. All these things are accelerating in the way that the economy is moving forward. And what they've done with us is they've given us enough resources to accelerate our ability to contribute to this new economy. And in ASU's specific case, this means a great investment in the Ira A. Fulton Schools, plural, of engineering, the launching of five new science and technology centers around future industries, and in particular, the advancement of new activities at ASU in advanced manufacturing of all things. You know, how do you really advance manufacturing in every possible way to return American economic prowess and American economic competitiveness around being able to build and manufacture anything? So that's what we're focused on.
What did that investment specifically, well, you kind of answered that question. I was asked dollar amount, but I want to move on, actually, because there's a lot to get into here. So that was at the state level, but the U.S. Senate also passed a $250 billion microchip legislation, the U.S. Innovation and Competition Act. What does that mean for Arizona? What does that mean for Arizona State University? There's a budding, I call it a cluster, really an economic emphasis on microchips, semiconductors, engineering. There's something budding here. I can see it. You can see it. But talk to me about this state Senate legislation that just passed.
Right. So it was the U.S. Senate, and so here's what's going on. So all things now are underpinned by increasing levels of computational capabilities. So microchips are the means by which computation occurs. Computation now is everywhere. It's in your house. It's in your thermostat. It's in your car. There's 80 to 100 to 200 computers in your car going forward. There's unbelievable microchips in your cell phone, in your iPad, in your laptop. I mean, it's just endless. And so all of these technological capabilities, people want to be the most advanced and centered in the United States. And so what's going on here is that we are accelerating at the national level investment in all things that allow us to be the most technologically competitive, most technologically advanced country in the world, from fundamental science up, that is, from fundamental physics and chemistry and biology and engineering and all things in those spaces, all the way up to the design of new systems, all the way up to the manufacturing of those systems, all the way up to the creation of whole new industries, whole new ways of doing things with this computational capability, new ways of attacking diseases, new ways of teaching and learning, new ways of expanding job creation capability from the home, manufacturing from the home, et cetera, all of which requires advanced technologies. And so this U.S. Innovation and Competitiveness Act is everything necessary for us to regain global competitive dominance in all things related to advanced technology, and that's what this is all about. And Arizona is very well positioned to emerge as a central place for this new economy, for these high-wage jobs, for this new way of doing things. And so these investments are all related to that.
I saw that there's the fifth annual ASU Congressional Conference this year coming up, and it's the topic is Growing Arizona's Technology Future. I know we're talking specifically about Arizona State University, but we're airing from Tucson, Arizona. And I had an economist from the University of Arizona on Friday's show talking about, I call it job regrowth, right? I wouldn't say these are new jobs from where we were pre-pandemic, but in terms of regaining jobs that were lost during the pandemic, we talked about Arizona's numbers, but I think the Phoenix area accounted for something like, Dr. Crow, 95% of that job regrowth, with significant slow recovery in Tucson and Flagstaff. When we talk about growing Arizona's technology future, Dr. Crow, how does that not mean growing Phoenix's technology future? What does it look like to actually grow a statewide technology future, and how does ASU and our three public universities, in your mind, have a role to play in that? How can we make that happen?
Well, we've got great locations. We have the Sun Corridor here that runs from south of Tucson to up to Prescott. We've got fabulous industries, high-tech industries in Flagstaff, all around southern Arizona, all in central Arizona. We have all the features necessary. We need to put a huge amount of emphasis on workforce development, educational attainment, more technologically capable, technologically ready people, more high school graduates, more college graduates, both of those things, all of those things are necessary. And so what will happen is we're going to see a lot more spread of this economic opportunity throughout Arizona as soon as we get more of these research centers going, more educational attainment, more ready people coming into the workforce. And so at the end of the day, this is mostly about human capital development, and driving forward with human capital at the highest rate and at the highest level of numbers. And once we get that, better and moving in the right direction, which the universities, all three universities and the community colleges and others are deeply dedicated to moving forward, we're going to see more and more investments in Arizona, more and more expansions in Arizona. And we're seeing that a little bit already. We're just going to see a lot more, because this is a great place to make these things happen. The missing link is not the tax code or the quality of the weather or the climate. The missing link is the human capital investment that's necessary. And so that's really where we're concentrating among the universities, is on human capital development.
I want to go back before we leave here. Tell me more about the ASU Congressional Conference. It's the fifth annual one. What happens there? And it's very specific to ASU, but what's the hope with this conference?
So the hope is that we bring the delegation together and we sit around and we talk about how can we advance Arizona. How can we help Arizona to become more competitive? How can we help Arizona to secure more national investment? Arizona, for a lot of different reasons, we didn't end up with the national labs like they have in Colorado or New Mexico or California. For lots of different reasons, we have been not evolving at the same rate of speed from a research and development perspective as a place like Washington State. Or a place like Texas. And so our economy then is not as competitive as those economies, because we don't have underpinning in our economy enough knowledge creation drivers that then create an environment in which new things happen. So what we do with our congressional delegation is, figure out how we can work together to help facilitate those kinds of outcomes. How do we further evolve Arizona's economy to be as successful as possible, which then lifts opportunity for everyone. And so that's really what we focus on in these meetings.
Yeah, I was mentioning right before you came on, Dr. Crow, that the Sun Belt's growth has really come from, I think, a combination. This isn't an original idea, but I heard it and I think it's powerful, of being low cost, low wage, low tax, low service. And there's a deep sense that that paradigm is shifting and that the way in which we think about state growth and state economy is going to change. And in my mind, it reflects back to what you just said there. Last question, as we close out there, you mentioned the state does 10%, you know, really a funding of what ASU creates for itself. You mentioned this is the fifth year that you're getting together with the congressional delegation. Is there anything more that we need from either our state government or our national government that you are really urging at this time in terms of investment?
Yeah, well, we need to get everyone to graduate from high school. We need all high school graduates to be prepared for the 21st century, not the 20th century, which means a new era of high school graduates. We need lots of people to go to technical school. We need lots of people to go to community colleges. We need lots of people to go to college. We need lots of people to go into the military and get technically trained. We then need to build a lifelong educational framework for people to come in and out of learning throughout their entire life. We need to blow up this old model that it's all linear and step function, and lots of people don't finish and lots of people don't graduate, and then they don't adjust going forward. So what we need a new human capital focus. We need to take human beings and empower everyone to have the greatest potential to have the best life possible in the economy and in the society that we're building. And that's where we need to put our emphasis. That's what we really need to focus on.
Dr. Michael Crow, president of Arizona State University, as always, grateful for your time here speaking to Tucson and Southern Arizona, an ASU update, but speaking to the future of the entire state. I always appreciate it. And Dr. Crow, thank you for your time. Until next time, we'll do this again soon.
All right. Thanks, Zach. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
That does it for our show today, this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here. Thanks for being with us. If you missed any of today's show, you can catch it on our podcast. Go to kvy.com/podcast or iTunes or Spotify and catch what you missed there. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster after that. When we return on Wednesday, we'll be with our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton. Also, famed Tucson artist, Joe Pagic, looking forward to that and so much more this week. We'll be back Tucson, same time, same place. Stay safe out there.